Working Cows Podcast, episode 128.
Welcome to the podcast that gives producers a platform to discuss and share paradigm-challenging practices. Practices that have increased the effectiveness of their operation and the joy that their families have received from this lifestyle.
Howdy, everybody. It's Clay Connery, host of the Working Cows Podcast, powered by the Global Ag Network. Here with another episode for you. We have Steve Kenyon on the show today, and I was recently at the Holistic Management Canada Conference in Camrose, Alberta, and had the opportunity to spend a couple of days rubbing shoulders with Steve and a few others up there and witnessed in first person or witnessed in person the nature of many different people who were exemplifying the quality of being a lifelong learner. And so I took the opportunity to track Steve down and say, hey, can we go record an episode about lifelong learning and about the value of it and how you go about doing it? And so we sat down in my hotel room and recorded this episode. Steve, thanks for joining me again on the Working Cows Podcast.
Glad to be here.
So it was good to be with you today at the Organic Alberta Conference. Appreciate the opportunity to sit down with you here today live in my hotel room and take some time asking you some questions about being a lifelong learner. And just today you were there manning a booth, but also sitting in on the sessions, and think it's a good opportunity to think a little bit about why a guy like yourself continues to go to different things when you're also teaching a lot of different classes and these kinds of things. So what is your perspective on continuing education for yourself, and how do you keep on involved in those kinds of endeavors?
Yeah, I guess it's kind of a lifelong thing, obviously. I don't think you can ever know too much. One of my favorite sayings that I learned years and years ago is the more you know, the more you know you don't know. Some days I almost get overwhelmed by the information that you learn at some of these conferences and seminars. You think you kind of, you know something about a subject, and all of a sudden there's one little tangent it takes, and you know, a speaker says one little thing and you're like, oh, there's a whole new area that opened up that now I need to learn. And it's like, oh, there's a lot of work there to go out and get all that knowledge, right? So some days it's almost overwhelming because you want to learn so much and keep up to date on it. But yeah, no, it's just important for me to keep learning and never get stagnant.
How are you intentional about the learning opportunities you take in? Are there things that you pass off because it's not a good investment of your time, or do you just look at all learning opportunities equally? How do you make sure that it's going to be relevant and beneficial?
Kind of just take it as it comes. I mean, years ago, I used to try and attend every school and every conference that I could. Just take the opportunity when it arose. And now, I guess I travel a lot more. I get invited to speak at conferences. So I don't really get to pick and choose anymore, right? They want me to come to a conference, but then, you know, not only do I get to go to have a talk, well, there's, you know, however many other speakers that are there that I get to listen to. So it's amazing, you know, speakers that I didn't even think I would learn, you know, didn't even know about before, and all of a sudden I'm learning stuff that's brand new to me. So yeah, it's just still some days is overwhelming. There's so much information out there.
So do you have any advice for speaking in front of your heroes? Because I'm about to do it in a couple of days.
I've been there speaking in front of people who you're like, oh, they're going to, you know, be criticizing what I said. And you know what? Just be honest, be truthful. I would say one of the biggest things I learned is from Gerald Fry. I talked to him one time. I got to take his school and we got to sit down in this little remote cabins in the forest of BC is where the school was taught. And we all had these little cabins we could stay in. We sat around around a fire, and just enjoyable talking to him. And one of the things I got from him is about to be humble, but confident. Mm. Right. I mean, there's no way you know everything,
right?
But be confident in what you do know. And yeah, it's just, It's not that hard.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I really appreciate that. That's good. And I guess what are some of the things that you are excited about being able to take in when you do hear something? What are some of the kinds of continuing education opportunities that draw you in? Like, oh, I want to be there for that one.
Okay. That would be a passion. Like, what am I passionate about right now? My passions have changed over the years, right? You get excited about one topic and then another one comes up. I'd say right now, my most passionate part of what I'm learning or even teaching about is biodiversity, insects, critters, you know, soil organisms, microbiology, and which is very ironic because I remember back in the day when I was in college, I took a course called microbiology. Basics microbiology. Mm. I almost failed it. the instructor said later, he was telling someone else that he had this one student who would have failed microbiology if it wasn't for the lab work. Because I got like 95% on the lab work all the time, right? Because I love doing stuff. But right. I couldn't learn. I have troubles learning things when I can't pronounce them. Right. So all think of all the names of the microbiology, right? Like there's no way I can even pronounce them, let alone remember them. So it's funny because I hated microbiology in college and now like it's my passion. I don't say any of the names, right? They're bugs and fungus, but I love the idea and learning about them, what they do with the soil. So sure. That's kind of a passion for me too right now.
What forms do you find your learning coming in? And I mean, books, podcasts, conferences, webinars, what kind of learning opportunities do you find yourself drawn to?
My learning ability. I'm not a big reader, right? I've read quite a few books. Most books that I've read, and apologize to any of the authors out there, I get about 3/4 of the way through them and get bored. And then I don't. There's a lot of books that I haven't finished. I haven't read the last chapter, but I get what I wanted out of it, and then I kind of fade off. I'm a strong D personality. I need the punchline, right? I want the end of the joke. Don't bore me with the details. So I'm impatient that way. So I need nerds. So I like having nerds at conferences. And with all due respect to the nerds, they're amazing people, very scientific, very smart. But I want the punchline out of it. So at a conference, right, it's, you know, an hour. Their book is, you know, 32 yeah. hours worth of reading, right? So I want the punchline. I get that tidbit. And then that interesting part, I'll go ask them about it or I'll email them about it. And then they give me the short version of it, right?
Sure.
So for me, I need nerds, but I need it in plain language.
Yeah.
Because I'm a very impatient, dominant personality. Give me the answer now, and sure. That's all I want.
Yeah. What is the personality profile, the D comes from, that you're talking about?
We've got a personality test that it originates from the DISC personality test. Mine's a little bit different, but that's the base model. The D is a dominant leader.
Sure.
I mean, if you know the DISC profile, that's okay. What it is. Yeah.
Gotcha.
So,
yeah. What are some tools that you use for learning, going into a learning experience, taking notes? How are you categorizing and keeping track of what you're learning?
Yeah, I'll usually take point form. Used to be on a piece of paper. Now it's on my phone usually. So yeah. keeping track of things and if something, you know, interests me. Then I write it down and then I'll, you know, look that up later or ask somebody about it later. But yeah, usually just taking point form notes.
Sure. What about mentorship in your life?
Mentorship. Oh, I've had lots of mentors. Numerous to mention. I mean, I started out, I would say the first time I drank the Kool-Aid, I would say was just in college. I had some very, very experienced holistic management practitioners close to me. Don Campbell was one of them, and Dennis Wabasser. They were the two main ones that I really got a lot of information from. And I couldn't actually take the holistic management course. I couldn't get one put together. I tried and tried and tried. And this was back in about 1997, I think. And so I kind of wedged my way into that holistic club, right? I wasn't a part of it, but they let me because I smiled nice or something. They let me into it. So I got a lot of information from them. And I read the book a couple times back when it was called HMR.
Yeah.
And basically self-taught myself that. And then I took Ranching for Profit, took a bunch of other schools, right? Really got into Dick Divin's low-cost cow-calf, Gerald Fry's linear measuring. Tried to take everything and every conference that came along. So
Very good. Opened this conversation up to some questions from my private Facebook group and got some really good questions here from them. Have you made a mistake that totally altered your path? A paradigm shifting mistake, if you will.
Oh, a paradigm shifting mistake. There's so many. made lots of mistakes. I would say I went into farming with not a lot of paradigms. So that's kind of my advantage. My dad was a farmer, but he quit when I was like 13 years old. So I didn't really do a lot on the farm. So then when I came back to the farm, you know, I didn't have those paradigms. So everything was new and everything was from a different perspective. And I think that's how I moved into it. But mistakes that I've done, I would say the biggest mistakes I've done is human resources. Right? Nothing to do with cows or grazing or anything. Those are the biggest ones where I didn't end a relationship quick enough, right? I'm talking business relationship, right? Where I, for example, a landowner that kept, you know, taking and didn't understand the agreements we had and you keep giving and giving and giving. And one example, the last year of this deal that we had, it cost me 14 grand, right? Like, okay, you got to know when to say no, right? Like you can't always be the nice guy and, you know, get rolled, you know, you got to say no once in a while. And there's points where you just have to say, no, we're not doing this anymore. It's done. Right. So
yeah.
Human resources is the most important part of my business. So that's where I need to put the most work.
Sure.
Right. It doesn't matter how good of a grazer I am if I can't find the land to graze. Or if I can't find the cattle to graze on that land.
Or
right?
If you can't keep the land to graze.
If you can't keep it, yeah. If you keep losing land, yeah. So, sure. Yep, you bet.
And what are some, you know, I mean, I suppose it just boils down to integrity issues of paying on time and sticking to what you said the plan was going to be when it comes to managing those relationships with your landowners and stuff like that.
Building trust, right? Any relationship. There's so many relationships we have in our lives, not just personal ones, but business relationships. And every one of them is based on trust.
Yeah.
Right. So if one side of that, you know, agreement breaks trust, then from there, it's pretty tough to carry on.
Right.
It's happened a few times and I should have said no sooner. Right.
Sure.
And it's just, you got to learn that time when to say, no, we're done. We're moving on.
Right. So one of my board members at the church where I pastor, he's got 8 kids, and he said, I was figuring up sitting around the supper table one night, I figure I have over 100 relationships that I manage there because I manage my relationship with each individual kid, my relationship with my wife, her relationship with those kids, and all of the kids' relationships with each other, yeah, you know?
That adds up.
Yeah. And so, you know, he lives even further from the middle of nowhere than I do, you know? So he doesn't have a computer or the internet or a phone that would download this. So a shout out to him isn't worth much to him personally, unless I burn him a CD and say, here, listen to this. But, you know, it is human resources. You know, I give a talk at this conference that we're both at. And my last point is everybody struggles with people management. And I've talked to some of the best grazers in the world. I'm probably pretty confident in saying that on this podcast. And I've gotten in touch with them and said, hey, I feel like the Working Cows podcast, we, from episode 2, Dallas Mount has shared that the biggest barrier to success in a ranching business is people management. Yet I find myself drawn to soil health and grazing and all these things that we would say are quote unquote sexy and enjoyable to talk about. And we don't talk about the human resources side. So I reach out to these great grazers and I say, hey, would you be interested in talking about this area of human resources on your for an episode of the podcast? And like, I don't really do a really good job of that. I don't feel like I'm the person to talk about it, you know?
Yep.
And so it's interesting, even the ones that you see out there that you feel like they've got it going on with their ranching business, they're struggling with the people side of it too. It's tough.
It is. It's a, when I first got introduced to that, it was kind of by accident. Same thing. I thought, well, whatever, it's just people. We don't deal with people, right?
Like dealing with people, I wouldn't be a rancher.
Yeah, I wouldn't have cows. But what happened was I had an exchange student come to work on our ranch for a winter. And he was still going to university, but he had to write reports back about what he was learning on the ranch, right? So he'd come out and help us for a few hours, and then he'd do some of his work. And one night at supper, he came up to me just before supper. We were sitting down, and he said, "Okay, I want to write a report tonight. I want to write a report about how many people are in your business." And I mean, we're sitting down at the table. This is a small family farm, right? Just getting started, and get diapers on bums sitting around there, right? And I'm like, "What are you talking about? Like, you're looking at us, right? It's us right here. This is it." And he said, "Well, no. What about the guy that delivered your hay?" I'm like, "Well, he's just a trucker, right? Like, what do you mean? He's not part of the farm." "Well, what about the guy that fed your bulls when you went on holidays?" "Oh, he's just a neighbor that we do favors back and forth." "Well, what about your landowners?" I'm like, "Oh, we got quite a few landowners." "What about your cattle customers? What about your hay?" You know, all of a sudden, so after supper, we sat down and I started a list of all of the people just outside of my business that I need, that I have relationships with. And it was an eye opener for me. I'm like, "Wow, that's a lot of relationships to manage." Yeah. Right. And then I took the TPAP course out of Texas, and they did a personality test. That's where it got originally the first DISC test from. And I've altered it and changed it and made it a lot funner and and more entertaining and more memorable. More memorable is the big part. So then I started teaching the personality test too. And it's the most important thing with the people we deal with. There's the way I kind of relate to it is there's four different personality styles. I mean, there's variations within that, but four basic ones. I look at it as there's four different languages, right? You need to learn how to communicate with the other styles, right? They have a different language. Mm-hmm. So how can you communicate so that both sides can understand the conversation and the agreement and maintain that trust? And once you start looking at that and thinking about that, it's the biggest part of my business.
Yeah, absolutely. So I don't think we fully drilled down on one of my earlier questions. I want to circle back around to that. How are you taking in learning opportunities? I know you said you want the punchline, but are there formats that I guess you said the speaking you like because you get the 32 hours of reading and a 1 hour talk.
Is this where I'm supposed to say podcast?
No. I was not asking for that. I'm not digging for that.
Yeah. No.
But I mean, like,
to me, a podcast is fast.
Right.
Right. So it is, it's, 30 minutes, 45 minutes. It's not reading a book for 36 hours.
Right. Where I was going with that was actually, honestly, was, you mentioned you were listening to Nicole Masters' book, For the Love of Soil. Do you do a lot of audiobook in your travels, or?
I haven't in the past, but if I'm going to buy a book, I want to, from someone like that, I want to get it autographed. So I already told her that I'm going to buy your book when I see you.
Right.
And every time she's in our province, for example, for her, I'm somewhere else.
Right.
Right. So I haven't actually met with her. So my wife finally downloaded me the book. So she's my techie nerd, my wife. Yeah. So she downloaded it for me, and that's what I was listening to it in the evenings. So
gotcha.
Yeah. Yep.
I am a painfully slow reader. So audiobooks are my primary way of consuming books. And I don't know how people can read a book out loud into a microphone faster than I can read it in my head, but they can. So I just do that. So anyways, maybe it's my lack of ability to concentrate and having to go back and read the same paragraph three or four times. But
yeah, that happens to me too.
Yeah.
You get distracted. I think I'm reading, but I'm also thinking about something else at the same time. And I don't have a clue what I just read.
Right. Yep. I guess I did shoot this one across the bow to you when we were at supper tonight. Anything you've learned in the last 18 months, or the most surprising thing that you've learned in the last 18 months?
Oh, okay. I did think about that a little bit. And just the other day, I was at a meeting with a whole bunch of agriculture, kind of with the government, whatever. But I was sitting around the table with a bunch of people. And at the table was a Alberta turkey producer. I don't know anything about the turkey industry. And a little novel fact that I didn't know, which really shocked me, that Alberta, right, the province of Alberta, has 48 turkey producers. That's it.
Yeah.
3 million people, there's 48 turkey producers. So kind of blew me away. That means there's some really big barns, right? Like our system is, something's wrong with it.
Yeah.
If there's only 48 farmers that are raising in, you know, in industrial, I mean, there's a lot of little farmers doing a few here and there, but 48 actual registered turkey farmers. That blew me away.
Yeah. That is good. Yeah. Yep. So you're going to be starting to graze some turkeys?
I don't know. Maybe. Yeah. I don't know. Get a big barn. Yeah. Right.
is the word farm or ranch in Canada?
I think it depends on who you're at and where you're at.
Okay.
My definition would be a farm, could be a mixed farm, could have animals and crops.
Sure.
Whereas a ranch just has
livestock
of some
kind. Because I notice it's greener pastures ranching.
Yeah.
And I know I interviewed Bob Havard from the UK, and they were all laughing at me calling his place a ranch because they're all farms. Even though he only raises cows and grass, it's still a farm.
Oh, yeah.
So I didn't know if that was a cultural difference.
I think some people have the size of the cattle farm, too, would be a ranch, right? If it was really big or not. So whatever.
A lot of acres, you mean?
Yeah.
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 Gotcha. Which is more valuable, lessons learned from mistakes or successes?
Oh, mistakes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And better if it's someone else's mistake.
Those are cheaper.
Oh, yes. Yes. Much better. Yeah.
Yeah.
I've made too many of them myself.
So. Yeah, for sure. So I think this is just a veiled way to ask about portable water systems. Have you learned any good portable water systems to move with intensive grazing?
Oh, okay. Now we're getting into production practices.
Yeah.
Then if they're really after portable water systems, well, they better go check out the Facebook page and look at my solar powered rock picker.
Perfect.
That's, yes. That's about all I need to say.
Yeah. And you're pumping out of a dam for that, right?
Yeah. Dugout or a slough or anything, right. A creek or whatever's there. It's totally portable. You just move it around and park it right where you need it.
Yep. Good. And you grazing, back to that or from a lane through a lane back to that?
Depends.
Yeah.
Yeah. Depends on the situation. There's five different types of grazing cells and I have them all. So.
And how do you make a decision on that?
Depends on the land. There's all sorts of, I mean, that's a whole cell design course we could talk about. That's a whole nother podcast.
Right.
But
at least.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a whole day in school.
Right.
Yeah. But yeah, it varies on the land. It varies on the situation, the environment, the people, the herd, lots of things.
Could you boil it down? I know these are tough, but could you boil it down to the top five lessons that you've learned?
Top five. How about two?
Okay.
Might have to think about that top. Well, number one is the human resources, right? We've got to be able to manage our human resources. Being able to communicate, build trust, earn trust, reciprocate that. And, you know, that's how we build relationships. We get ahead further if you can build that relationship with all those people, because more people are willing to work with you, right? If you have a positive attitude and you're trustworthy and, right, you do what you say, right, you build these relationships. There's a term, I think Stephen Covey first brought it up, about how you have this emotional bank account, right? You make deposits and you make withdrawals, right? My kind of thought process on that is it's your opportunity with every interaction to make a deposit into that emotional bank account, right? So, you know, right here, you and me sitting across the table, I'm trying, you know, that's part of my plan, is to build trust and develop a relationship that, you know, down the road we have a trust together, right?
Right.
I try and do that with everybody, with every relationship. And it doesn't always work, right? There's some people we just, like I said, you got to back oil away from. Yeah, it's done. You give them your best chance, and if they don't reciprocate, then you walk away from it, right? But
sure,
that's just human nature.
Yeah. So is that first?
Number one is, human resources. Number two, best lessons learned, learning how to do an economic gross margin analysis, right? I mean, it's the business side again.
Yeah.
It was a game changer for me, big time. Huh. First one I ever saw was at the Rancher for Profit School. So very grateful for them for that. And, turned the farm around, right? I went in there, you know, I sold some cows 'cause I was broke. I couldn't afford to, you know, turn around, and, learned how to do a gross margin analysis, came home, made some really big decisions, and moved forward ever since.
Sure.
So
you were too broke to pay attention.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. I paid attention there, though.
Right.
I tell you.
Right. Yeah. 6 days. No, but I think that's true, though. You get to a point where all you can think about is money, and you literally aren't paying attention when you're in some of those places because all you're thinking about is money. So
you're just putting out fires. You're just scrambling. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's it. In the talk I gave at this conference, I showed a slide where I took a poll of the people and asked them what was their favorite episode. And I supplied the first three episodes and then expected them to supply more episodes if they thought one of them other ones was better. And for a long time in that poll, or longer than I was comfortable with, it appeared that I had peaked at episode two of the Working Cows podcast. So, but you have reiterated what was said there. And we started off and we were talking about the four pillars of a ranching operation. And Dallas Mount said, the greatest barrier to success is people. The second greatest barrier is economics and finance, because we spend a lot of time doing what we like to do, and that's cows. And maybe if you've maybe drank a little bit of the Kool-Aid, it's grass. And we don't spend a lot of time practicing getting good at doing things we don't like to do, which is, for most people in this industry, economics and finance and people relationship management. And so it's just a reiteration of those two key principles that really we want to be successful in ranching. We need to get good at managing people relationships and managing economics and finance.
Yeah.
And your book, Calendar of the Year Around Grazer, is a great resource for that. You tell that story about selling a couple of cows so you could afford to attend the Ranching for Profit school in there. And I appreciate you being willing to share that. I think it sets a lot of people free from that. Any more that you want to say about the economic analysis portion of that? How has that helped you make decisions? What kind of ways is that informing how you make a decision at Greener Pastures Ranching?
Yeah, the profit centers, or like the parts of your farm that you're doing, all the fun stuff, the production practice side of it, right? That's the least important part of my business. Right? Am I bale grazing, or should we be doing, you know, swath grazing this year, or the intensive grazing? How intense should we be grazing? All that is the least important part of my farm. None of it matters unless it can pass my economics and my finance test, right? So basically, if it can do, you know, gross margin analysis will show me the profitability of something. Do that with a gross margin analysis. Am I making money at it? The financial side, I've got to be able to afford to do it. Right, I've got to have the cash flow, the money to put out, to be able to get it up and running, and then have to wait for the revenue to come in. Yep. Right, so we got to have two sides here. We've got two sets of books that we need to manage and make sure they're both working. And then again, that's going to determine, both of those together are going to determine which production practices I do this year, this season, this, right? Because it'll change. Markets change. Situations change, the price of hay changes, the price of cattle changes. So we have to be able to do those on an ongoing basis to keep your business moving. Now, above that is, I still put human resources above that, because I might have, you know, a human resource issue that has veto power over my economics and finances, right? I don't have the manpower to get this done, right? It's profitable and I can afford to do it, but I don't have the manpower for it. The labor market isn't there, or I don't have the desire to do that, or the ability to do that. It could be that it just doesn't go against my morals and principles, or my mission statement, right? The mission statement at Greener Pastures is economic and environmental sustainability for generations. That's our guide. That's our moral code. Mm-hmm. So there could be a production practice that comes along that I could make a lot of money at, but it's not environmentally sustainable, right? So it's going to degrade the land. It's not going to be sustainable for generations, right? Like, you know, in 15 years, the land will be dead or something is off. So I won't do it, right? So that human resources is still above economics and finances.
Sure. Or like custom grazing turkeys in greenhouses in Alberta.
There you go. Yeah. I think you were at the same conference as me today. I never asked him about turkeys. It was chickens. Yeah. So maybe turkeys would work, because he said chickens wouldn't.
Right. Well, Lord willing, we'll just say that. Not that I'm blaming God for my inability to get podcasts produced and released all the time, because it's definitely sometimes just a function of time for me. This will be out February 17th, I think. I'm doing the math on my episodes, right?
There you go.
Anything you want to share with people coming up? Are you winding down the school season? When do the cows show up and Steve doesn't get away anymore?
Yeah, no, summer is definitely busy. Basically, end of March, I'm done my talking and my seminars and stuff. So, and I'm pretty well full up till then. Mm-hmm. I'm heading out to the East Coast here next week, and then some around Alberta. I try not to get too busy. I get too busy. I got a family at home, so
yeah. Sure. No, I get
One a week. That's about enough to be away. So,
yep, for sure. Anything? And I can edit this out. Anything else you wanted to share? You were talking about looking for an apprentice, somebody to bring in as a manager.
That's long-term planning ahead. Sure. Someday we're gonna, move on and I want to go, find another environment to see how this works in. I've been in this environment and, this weather conditions and this, for quite a while now. And I'd love to go somewhere totally different.
Right.
I always have people ask me, we've got some land over here. You can, we want to come rent it. Is Greener Pastures interested in renting it? And usually I tell them it's too far away, or I turn around and tell them that it's not far enough away. Because I want to go to a totally different environment. But if it's too far away, I got to drive too far to it, then the economics isn't there.
Right.
It just doesn't work. But someday I'm going to be like somewhere totally different.
I experientially know that this works here. I want to go experientially learn that it works in a desert or something.
Yes, yeah. Exactly.
What is your resource and base like? What's your environment there where you're at?
We basically live in the gray wooded soil zone central to northern Alberta. The soil, I guess, was originally created under leaf litter, so forest. And anything that's kind of open there now is, in the last 50 years has probably been bulldozed. And so the new native is a different type of a area. But we get usually, I think our average is 15 inches of rainfall in a growing season. Mm. That doesn't include the snow. In the wintertime, we get maybe anywhere from a foot to maybe 3 feet of snow, depending on the winter. We range from our coldest this winter so far was minus 48 degrees Celsius without the wind chill. In Fahrenheit, that's about minus 54, I think. So it's pretty cold. And we'll get up to, plus 35, plus 37 once in a while. I don't think I've ever seen it over plus 40, but that's got to be, 105 Celsius, something like that. Pretty warm.
I have the tab open in my... on my browser this week to convert Celsius to Fahrenheit. I was going to look it up there, but
I'm close, I think.
Yeah. No, I think you are. I won't take time to look that up right now. But so of course the Facebook page, you've already plugged it. Thank you for that. We got to get around to that every episode I have you on, I make sure I plug that because it in itself is a great continuing education tool. You do a great job of curating that and putting out what you're doing and then what you're writing and then what you're also learning, some of the resources that you've tapped into that you're taking advantage of. So I appreciate that.
I just like to try and get it as a, people ask questions. It's a learning opportunity for everybody, right? I still learn stuff on there all the time too. So it's great just trying to get people to open up and ask questions or to make their own comments. And I try and keep it very positive. Negativity isn't allowed.
Yeah. So that'll be linked in the show notes page for today, along with Steve's book and his previous appearances on the Working Cows podcast at workingcows.net/128. So anything else you want linked there, I'll throw that up there as well. But thank you for your time this evening. Appreciate you taking some time out during this busy season to sit down.
Excellent. Well, I'm pretty excited. There's a speaker I want to hear on Sunday here.
Yeah. So thank you, Steve.
Awesome.
Coming up next week, I look forward to releasing my talk from the Holistic Management Canada conference, and we'll be talking about some of the things I've learned over the course of this podcast and some of the people who have been influencing the things I've been learning. So coming up on episode 129, we will have my talk recorded live at the Holistic Management Canada Conference. We will get that to you as soon as we can, hopefully early next week. We'll see you then.
We invite you to visit workingcows.net to subscribe to the show via iTunes or Stitcher. You'll also find detailed show notes pages, resources from our guests, and the industry leaders who have influenced them. For more ideas on putting your cows to work for you in a more profitable way, tune in next week.
Would you mind answering that bottom question right there as a piece of bonus content?
So grazing contracts. In my environment, what I've found is that I need to rent the land from the landowners by the acre, and I need to sell the grazing to the customers on a per head per day basis. Mm-hmm. If I rent the land on a per head per day basis, as the land improves, as the margin gets better, then the landowner gets more money too, right? Which they always ask for raises anyway, but my management's improving the land, not theirs. So I make sure that it's definitely separate that way. So then when I get to the grazing side, I have only ever had grazing contracts on a per head per day basis, not by the pound a gain. Now, not that I'm scared about the pound a gain, but there's so many variables in that. I've had way too many phone calls. I started out by just going by per head per day. And as I got more into custom grazing and people knew about me, then I would get phone calls and people were asking me questions. And I've had so many questions, you know, at the end of the season, some guy phones me and says, "Steve, I got this guy. He sent me cattle for the summer and now he's saying the gains weren't there and he owes me like 10 grand. How do I get it?" Cows are gone. Yeah. Good luck. Right.
Yeah.
I mean, in Canada, we have just about every province, I'm pretty sure, has one. It's called the Animal Keepers Act. So that if, as a custom operator, a feedlot owner, anything like that, we're protected with a lien on the animals that we possess. Right. So if a custom guy, somebody sends me cattle and they don't pay me, well, I have the option to take those cattle to auction and sell them and take my money out. And then the rest would go back to the owner, right? If I can prove that that's the contract and that's the deal. So we have that protection. And it's actually, my lien is above the bank's lien, right? So I get paid before that. They don't like that.
Yeah.
Banks don't like that, but that's the act. I don't know if the US has anything like that, but we do. So that's my security. So that's definitely in my contract. We've got all sorts of different little, you know, the minor details that we've gone through to make sure that we have things figured out. But that's probably the biggest one, is it's on a per head per day basis.
Sure.
Per pound again, yes, depends how they're weighed, when they're weighed, full gut, empty gut, at the beginning of a 7-hour truck ride or the end, right? Like, It's been iffy over the time. Even when it's by the per head per day basis, guys will still, I don't want to say lie to me, but they'll lie to me. Right? Sometimes I don't understand why, but it's in that side of the business, right? It's every time I got to have a contract on the grazing side.
Right.
On my landowner side, Lots of them now, I don't even have a contract anymore. We start with a contract, or we at least go through a contract. So we've discussed it and read it. And then we have, you know, basically a handshake deal after that.
Yeah.
Again, it comes down to that trust, right? You build that relationship. Now, on the landowner side, I need to prove the trust, right? I need to prove that I can pay. I need to know that I'm taking care of their land, right? I have to show all that. And once we build that relationship, then they're okay with it. On the other side, they need to show me trust, right? More than I need to, because they're the ones paying me. And that's where it doesn't always work, right? Because you never know. And when margins are tight on that side of the business, push comes to shove, right? They're going to shove. So I've always got to have a contract on that side, which, you know, I wish it didn't have to be that way, but I enjoy the landowner side of the contracts better, because right, we can build up a trust, we can build that relationship, and it seems to go a lot easier. Like I said, I don't necessarily have contracts with everybody. There's a couple, like I said, there's a few mistakes that I made that I should have had a contract. And honestly, a couple of them that I'm thinking about right now, they refuse to sign a contract at the beginning, right? They said, no, 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 we don't need that. And that right. should have been a warning sign at the beginning.
Yeah.
But it is what it is.
Sure.
Yeah.
Thank you.